Blog Talk Radio.
Hello.
Oh, freedom.
No.
Oh, freedom. Oh, freedom over me. Before I'll be a slave, I'll be buried in my grave and go home to my Lord and be free. Well, no more moaning, no more moaning, no more moaning over me. Before I be a slave, I'll be buried in my grave and go home to my Lord and be free.
Well, let me tell you, there's no more wailing.
No more wailing. No more wailing over me. Before I be a slave, I'll be buried in my grave and go home to my Lord and be free.
There will be no more weeping,
no more weeping, no more weeping over me. Before I be a slave, I'll be buried in my grave and go home to my Lord and be free.
Hello and welcome back to the Antique Show. I'm your darling and dashing host, Push Nevada, coming to you live from Arizona State University, very bright and festive day, home of the Sun Devils, the erratic skateboarders, and they will knock you down. They have a license to ill, right? Tonight's guest is Diane Hettis, and she's here to talk a little bit about the legendary abolitionist and poet, Frances Ellen Watkins Harper. Ms. Hettis is also an interpreter of history, and she's going to tell us a little bit more about that. So let's welcome her to the show. Ms. Hettis, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good evening.
Good evening. Tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do.
As Diane Hettis or Frances Ellen Watkins Harper?
Okay.
I am Diane Hettis. I am a actress and lover of history by trade.
Okay.
As an interpreter of history, I study characters like Frances and interpret their character by knowing them intimately through their writings and associations.
Mm-hmm. So how did you get into the Frances Harper character? What drew you to her?
She's a writer and a poet, and that is my heart.
Okay. Earlier on the phone, we talked about what it means to interpret history, and I'd like for you to talk a little bit more about that, because when I think of an interpreter of history, I think of sort of like a revisionist. So what do you mean by an interpreter of history?
Well, for me, the meaning of an interpreter of history is one who looks at history with an open mind, and through research and knowledge, tries to find that piece that links us to the present, that how history is now, how it was written then, and how we can interpret it now. Maybe in the 60s or the 70s, the history books did not interpret the participation of the African Americans or Latinos or American Indians in any good light.
Okay.
And I look at it to try to find that good light, to regain the power for myself and the people I talk to that is lost because of someone else's editing.
Well, tell us a little bit about your work with Frances Harper and how you got into studying her and how you revised her history or her work. What was your first impression of her, I guess, from popular opinion or whatever you had read previously? And then tell us how you went about to explore her life at a deeper level and what you found.
Well, my first impression of Frances Eleanor Watkins Harper was that she was a powerful woman, a quiet spirit in the sense that she knew her place in the time she lived, but tried to live out of her box. And she was scorned. She was scorned for that. I mean, even her fellow abolitionists scorned her. The men were the ones who typically ran the show, and they chastised her for it sometimes, of her boldness. She was a member of the American women's suffrage after the Civil War. So she was somebody who was a proponent of women's and children's rights and racial freedom and justice, equality. I mean, she was born a free woman in a slave state. That took some courage.
So I guess the previous interpretations of her were sort of like maybe male dominated or paternalistic, and I guess you're coming in with a feminist interpretation of her life?
She could have been. Yes, I would say that.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that she lent that way, but because of her time, I mean, she was a person of protocol and learned, so because of her time, she knew when to be what she was and when not. I mean, she actually was given an invitation to speak at one time and was so distraught, and I guess you would say in today's terms, fed up by what the men were doing to the women and how they wouldn't let them speak only on certain subjects and everything, that she actually took a man's suit and fashioned it into a top and hoop skirt and spoke with it. And spoke wearing that suit.
Wow, yeah, that's pretty radical. I know that a lot of, during that whole suffrage period, a lot of her contemporary opponents were, in fact, other black abolitionists and black leaders. What were some of her challenges with that whole thing of challenging her opponents, and what was that like for her? What was she up against?
Oh, she was up against many things that women still deal with today, I'm sorry to say. In 1850, when she left Baltimore, she became the first woman to teach at the Union Seminary in Wilberforce, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And when she accepted the position, there was protest.
Okay.
The principal
from white and black?
Yes. The principal of the school, you'll be surprised to know, was the Reverend John M. Brown.
Oh, wow.
Famous, who led the famous revolt of Harper's Ferry. She became very good friends with them, with the Browns, and he hired her to teach at the school where he was principal. A lot of people don't know Reverend Brown as a principal of a school.
Yeah, you're right.
But he was, and that is how him and his family and Frances Harper became intertwined in this a fight for racial justice and equality and freedom.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
He supported John Brown supported Harper, and one of the things he said about her that she had firmly braved the flood of opposition which had manifested itself against her. And he gave her a commendation for doing this. And then she took a teaching position in Pennsylvania after 2 years of being at Wilberforce. And go ahead.
I was wondering, I just wanted to ask a question. Did she have any, did play any direct role in the Harper Ferry raid? Do you know?
That is unknown, but she was influenced by, you can believe or assume that she was influenced by the Reverend Brown's ideology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was reading Langston Hughes' bio, and his mother's second husband went to Harper's Ferry raid. She was widowed, of course, and I thought that was interesting. So what else did she do with her life? What else did she do? She goes to Tennessee and she starts teaching, and then what happened to her?
Well, she started teaching in Ohio, and then she moved to Pennsylvania in 1852, where she lived in an underground railroad station. And she helped. She was a help with the Underground Railroad, leading the movement of slaves toward freedom. And it had an effect on her, a profound effect. It was written about in her poetry, it later in her activist work. And then in 1854, she was exiled from her home state of Maryland because of the slavery laws that said that if black people who came through the northern border of Maryland would be sold into slavery again. And she became an exile. But this marked the beginning of her activism. She began giving anti-slavery speeches in northern states and Canada. She became a representative of the state anti-slavery society of Maine. So she traveled up and down the eastern seaboard. Her speeches included her prose and her poetry. And she always managed to combine with such brilliance, as I studied her, the issues that were closest to her heart of racism and feminism and classism.
Okay. So was she publishing a lot then? Were her speeches published during her time, or her prose, her work, or poetry?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. She actually published her first book of poems in 1845, and it was called Forest Leaves. And historians think that it was inspired by her time as a child and her time around nature. She also, one of the poems in that book of Forest Leaves is called Days of My Childhood. If you allow me, I'll read you a little bit of it.
Please.
Oh, childhood had laughter, song, and mirth, the freshness of life, the sunshine of earth. But instead of its gilded dreams and toys, I have lost their hopes and calmer joys. So she was always pointing toward the fact that there was a greater good, a higher cause.
Was she a religious woman? Was she affiliated with any particular denomination?
Oh, very much so. Two denominations tried to claim her. One is the Unitarian. They tried to claim her and different historical, a lot of her in the Unitarian Church in their archives. They have a lot of her things. And a lot of her speeches were given at several churches. Of course, they were part of the backbone of the anti-slavery slavery equality movement, as well as the Quakers, who have a belief that every man and woman is equal. And so that motivated her toward doing some of the things she did and listening to their doctrine and Unitarian doctrine. And she was exiled from Maryland in 1854, and she began her her advocacy for equality. She always had this way of putting the words that that probably would have irked or angered or caused some angst in some of the audiences that she talked to, which could have been in a abolitionist living room into a sneaking into traveling, making a journey back south into one of the churches that was trying to put forth the anti-slavery message. You know, one of the best things that sort of defines her is just her writings. Here's a writing from something that she said when she was in Maine and as a representative of the Maine Anti-Slavery Society. She said, "From the prisons comes forth a shout of triumph over the power of those whose ethics are the robbery of the feeble and the oppression of the weak, the trophies of whose chivalry are a plundered cradle and a scourge and a bleeding woman." She put together the words of anti-slavery.
What about her personal life? Did she get married? Did she have children?
Yes, she did. She had one child. She did marry a friend of her uncle's. She was raised by her uncle. The history is sketchy about her parents, just to say that they were free blacks in a slave state. They may have been killed.
Mm-hmm.
And she married Watkins, who became her husband, who died, I think, about in her fifth year of marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Her mother died when she was 3 years old, and her name Watkins, she was raised by her Uncle Watkins. I'm sorry, I misspoke. She was raised by her Uncle Watkins, so that's why it's Frances Ellen Watkins, and she married Mr. Harper.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
So you said that her history was kind of sketchy, perhaps her personal life. Are there any seminal books out there on her life that people can go out and read and find? What's out there on her life?
Yes, there's been a resurgence of interest in her.
Okay.
I would say in the last few years, she married Fenton Harper. She had the one daughter in 1862, which was Mary. After her husband died, she became increasingly vocal on feminist issues, since you mentioned that. And she made an alliance with Susan B. Anthony, which many people don't know either.
Okay.
Susan B. Anthony liked the style of her oratory and
mm-hmm.
how fervent she was about the cause. And she wound up, after the Civil War being a part of many different conferences and conventions that women would call together. But there are books. You can find them on eBay or Amazon. There's so many. Oh my God! There's so many books about her life and her in her biography. There have been different studies and stuff done about her.
Okay. Well, you say that you are interpreting, and she's your latest piece of work. How are you interpreting her? Is this just a personal crusade, or are you publishing, or are you speaking out on the whole Frances Harper reality? How are you interpreting?
I'm interpreting her as a woman from our past who was a powerful poet and writer and lecturer and political activist who was black, who was not as well known as some of the other women like Sojourner Truth, but she was dedicated and working for freedom. I'm interpreting her as someone that we should hold on to or grab onto as a powerful woman in our past, an example of motherhood and keeping her convictions and not being afraid to speak about the issues that she thought were important.
Okay, so she's sort of like a model of that women today can kind of look up to. Would that be the message, a strong feminist message for women of today?
Yes, it would be a strong message. I mean, even her idea of motherhood, she gave it in a speech called Enlightened Motherhood. And in that speech, she said that every woman should endeavor to be a true artist.
Okay.
And
that's interesting.
And she didn't mean that it was by like a painter or a sculptor or a musician or a poet or a writer, but it was an artist who would write on, in her words, would write on the table of a child's innocence.
Okay.
Who was able to mold and make a wonderful piece of art, having been given the tabula rasa, the blank slate,
mm-hmm.
in a child, and that we should, that as a woman, we should cherish that. And she felt that marriage. She said that marriage, one of her things was marriage is the mother of homes. It is an important, she thought it was duties. And many women's group, because even though she was sort of like this feminist, she also felt very highly about her duties as a woman and as a marriage, a mate. And she thought that these were the things that women should take care of. So she's an excellent example. Excellent example of, I mean, things and times have changed, but then she went, when her husband died, she became a feminist.
So what do you think she would say today with the what is going on, or the woman of today? How do you think she would characterize the woman of today?
I think she'd be astonished at how far we've come. They always say that history is now. And her history, she died in 1911, is not really that far away if you really think about it.
Right.
And of the woman today, she'd be astonished and say, keep on pressing forward. She would say, well, I hear that you had a woman run for president. You keep on...
Mm-hmm.
pushing forward, and next time, as a friend of mine would say.
So she wouldn't be disappointed?
I don't think she would be. She always had a spirit in her writings and everything, even though she told it like it was, talked about the evils and the madness of her time. She always had a faith. Her faith gave her the hope. So I don't think she'd be disappointed.
Okay. That's that's interesting, her, that on one end she was very dedicated to the idea of motherhood and wifery and being at home and home being first in a woman's life, but yet she was a feminist.
Yes, isn't that something? She wrote a poem, if I could just read a couple lines of it. It's called The Present
Sure.
Age. Say not the age is hard and cold. I think it brave and grand. When men of diverse sex and creeds are clasping hand in hand, the Pharisee from his sacred fires beside the Christian kneels, and clearer light to Islam's eyes, the word of Christ reveals. Isn't that amazing that in the 1800s she had a foresight to see
yeah.
that the Christian and the Muslim and the word of Christ need to be revealed?
Yes, yes.
That
yes.
is powerful. And she spoke, and in that poem, she goes on to talk about Buddhists and Judah and how everyone is children of our Lord and how the God, the light of God doth shine. She's a powerful woman.
Yeah. Speaking of her idea that women should strive to be artists, how has her work or her life, or just studying her, how has that affected your life? Are you an artist?
Yes, I am in not in the visual artist sense, but in the performing artist sense, and I do write, and I have brought my children up to be artists.
Okay.
I have writers and photographers and visual artists, and even though they try to deny it, they still try to do it. So it has affected my life, and it has confirmed. Looking at her, into her history, in her biography and everything, confirmed the fact of, you know, of the path I've chosen to introduce my children to art. I love the arts and the writing, and I love the written word.
Mm-hmm. So what's next for you? What's next for Diane Hedis?
What's next for Diane Hedis? I am going to try to be a part of some October events here in the Harrisburg area. And we have something that we do called Live and Learn with in conjunction with WITF, which is our PBS station. And it we always say, live a little, learn a lot. And on October 1st, they're doing a they pick a book and we read it. And the book that we're reading this time is Slavery and the Making of America by James Oliver Horton and Lois E. Horton. And we have a scholar come in and talk about it. And that's going to happen in Harrisburg at the Midtown Scholar at 1302 North 3rd Street, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And that's on October 1st.
Will you be publishing anything on your work with Frances Harper, and who is going to be your next historical character that you
Now, that's a good question. Publishing something, I hope to do so. I write plays and skits, and I have written some things, which is an interpretive play of her life, and so I hope to do something with that. To continue studying, and to I haven't finished with Frances. She's so full,
yeah,
and so bad. I mean, it's just amazing.
Yeah, you've done a play, and you're hoping to produce that. Do you mostly do historical plays?
No, I've done all types of plays, but I this is my first attempt at an historical one.
Okay. Do you have a website?
Not presently. I'm just getting back into the game, as they say, but anybody can reach me at IamHennis@AOL.com. They're still working on the website. It should be released by the second week in October.
Okay, that sounds great. That sounds great. Gosh, I got another question here. I'm interested to know what your next, I don't know if you mentioned it or not, what your next historical character, or do you know?
I don't know yet. Like I said, Frances is so vast that I'm finding out so many things about her and about the people she knew. I mean, she has, even William Steele, I met Leslie Geist through my interest in Frances Harper, seeing that she was a relative of William Steele. I met her, and so it's just like it keeps opening up another door of Frances, and to explore that door and to see where it is. I'm just hoping that I have enough sense of when to rein it in.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you have a full plate. You got a lot ahead of you. And did you say you were an actress as well?
Yes, I am.
Wow. How long have you been doing that?
For about 10 years. 10 years. I locally and some out of the area things. I do.
Do you have anything coming up?
No, I've been taking a sabbatical, working on these. Doing research and on Frances and working on getting that play done and getting it as accurate as possible.
Okay.
So is it time to go? Can I end with a couple of lines from something that Frances wrote?
Yes, you can.
God bless our native land. God bless our native land, land of the newly free. Oh, may she ever stand for truth and liberty. God bless our native land where sleep our kindred dead. Let peace at thy command above their graves be shed. God help our native land.
And on that note, we end here. That is Diane Hettis, a revisionist of history and an actress and an artist. Thank you for tuning in to the Leslie Gish Show and the Antique Show. And this is Push Nevada signing off, and we will see you next week. Thank you, Diane, for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me. It's been fun.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.